The Around the NFL Podcast will get you out of shady business deals.
Welcome to another edition of the Around the NFL Podcast, a special edition of the Around the NFL Podcast. My name is Dan Hansis. I'm joined in a room filled with heroes, Mark Sessler, Chris Wessling, and Greg Rosenthal. What is up, boys?
Hey, Dan.
And, well, we talked about it on Sunday's show, and check out the Week 17 recap that we rolled out late last night for the latest in the NFL in terms of the games. But what we're talking about today is, listen, internally it's been told, stay away from Black Monday. Don't use the term. It's a little bit of a sensitive issue.
You just said it.
Oh, that's right. But even I mentioned that this is a special episode. Mark, you told me on Sunday's show, special maybe not the word to use in this circumstance.
I corrected
either.
You.
My dog, Mark with a C.
So let me just, you know, say we coined this on our Twitter show, which you could also check out, a lot of content. But this is not our Black Monday podcast. Greg, it is our
New Horizons podcast.
New Horizons Monday.
Feels like I'm being sent away against my own.
This is actually a new podcast that we're starting called the New Horizons Podcast. We need another revenue stream, more advertisers, and we're going to explore the mind and the body.
So, yes, this is something of a mini pod, or we seek to have it be a little shorter than a typical pod. But what we're going to do is spin through each of the teams that are involved with comings and goings in the big chair and talk about what's the latest as of Monday mid-afternoon here on the West Coast. Also, at the end of the show, we will throw it to a good back-and-forth conversation we had with NFL Network's Mike Garofolo on our Twitter show when we talked about some teams, some vacancies, a little talk about Nick Foles. He's at the Eagles facility, Mike, so that will come up a little later in the show. But let's get to it. Let's dig in right now and start with the news that, Wes, we thought really would never come because of the way the organization operates. And frankly, the reports ahead of time that the Bengals were leaving it up to Marvin Lewis whether he wanted to return for, what is it,
Well, Marvin Lewis is an idiot.
17th season? Is that what it would have been? That was what was out there. And then I woke up this morning and there it is. Marvin Lewis and the Bengals decide mutually to move on once and for all. After 16 years, no playoff wins, a conscious uncoupling, you could call it, Mark Sessler.
Minus Apple.
Minus Apple. Wes, Marvin Lewis and the Cincinnati Bengals, once and finally, no more.
Well, as Solomon Wilcots once told you for your pain rankings article, Marvin Lewis raised the Titanic in Cincinnati. I think newer football fans would not believe how sunk this Bengals franchise was. Before Marvin Lewis arrived, the previous coaches under Mike Brown from 1991 to 2003 had a winning percentage of 270. That is almost unprecedented, maybe unprecedented.
It's not even a good batting average in baseball.
This organization is sort of a vanishing breed as a family-run operation in a business that hopes to be raking in $25 billion annually by 2027. This is unique to the Bengals. No one knows their organizational structure. You can't say that about any of the other 31 teams in the NFL. No one really knows who's calling the shots and what shots are being called and what sort of the flow chart is there. And I think that's one of the reasons why Marvin Lewis stuck around for so long. He had a lot of influence in the draft room, a lot more than most coaches do. And I think that organization has not been confident they could find an upgrade on Marvin Lewis.
Well, he rebuilt them. It was one of the great rebuilding jobs of the last decade, and it's unfortunate they couldn't get over the hump to just win one playoff game to get that off their back, because I love those mid-2000s Bengals teams. They were fun to watch. And what you talked about with the organization, Bengals fans I know have a complicated relationship with Marvin Lewis, and it definitely went on too long. But what he did was make Mike Brown, their owner, start to modernize. They basically didn't have a scouting department. They didn't have a personnel department. Like, he made them start hiring as part of even staying with the job back in 2011. He made them say, hey, we got to update. We need a scouting department. We need to do this and that. And I think he did a good job. He was there too long. But if you kind of like look at what he accomplished, compared to what the other five coaches who lost their jobs in the last 2 days accomplished. It's like there's no comparison, and it's almost a bit of a shame that I think he's been used as a punchline over the last few years, including by us.
Well,
I'll admit it.
That's
you think?
That's all well and good, but I also feel like he's someone that was given a endless string of rope to not achieve nearly as much as you would want someone.
Last
you
3 years,
if
I
you
agree.
Were a Bengals fan back in 2003 and said, we've just hired Marvin Lewis, and here's the good news. He's going to do enough to stick around for 16 years. You would have to think, not only are we going to win a playoff game or two, but you're probably going to get a Super Bowl appearance in there because coaches don't stick around that long. But this is a different team, to Wes's point, and they're perfectly willing and capable and patient enough to a fault to stick around with Andy Dalton when other teams are urgently looking to upgrade at the most important position there is. And they had one of the AFC's most talented rosters a couple seasons ago, and you still can't win a playoff game. I don't know what more Marvin Lewis needed to do to not have this job at this point.
Here's a stat that neatly sums up your point. There are two coaches in NFL history to go 12 years without a Super Bowl appearance and not be fired. Marvin Lewis and Chuck Knoll. And it happened for Chuck Knoll after he had that leeway of going winning four Super Bowls. Marvin Lewis had the leeway of raising the Titanic.
For what it's worth, Marvin Lewis in his press conference today endorsed Hugh Jackson as his replacement. Here's what Lewis had to say.
I think he's more than qualified. I think he's been in a couple of difficult situations. And that's tough. And it hasn't broke his way. But I think he's an excellent football coach. He's a great motivator. And he's detailed. And so I think he deserves an opportunity, if not here, somewhere else.
So Hugh Jackson, if he got another job, you wouldn't think he could get another job anywhere else. But maybe Cincinnati is, again, Wes, the one operation that runs itself so differently that Hugh Jackson impossibly gets another chance in the big chair.
You have asked me many times on this podcast if I feel sorry for Bengals fans, if I take their feelings into consideration. I've never felt sorry for Bengals fans because I think they do it to themselves. If they hire Hugh Jackson, I will feel sorry for Bengals fans.
The vibe doesn't seem like they will. They're interviewing Darren Simmons, their special teams coordinator, Bill Lazor, offensive coordinator. They've asked to interview Zach Taylor.
Lazor in the big chair.
I don't know, just the way that Marvin Lewis was talking about it. I don't know if Mike Brown is as big a fan of Hugh Jackson as Marvin Lewis.
I mean, can we spread a wider net than just simply the people already on the payroll? This is so Bengals.
No.
Like, Zach Taylor,
I want to see
going in there. Rams quarterbacks coach Josh McDaniels, they requested. I can't imagine
there you go.
The job Josh McDaniels would want to take.
Just hire Hugh. It's fun.
Don't do it. Don't do it. I feel bad for the Cincinnatians.
I don't think Hugh Jackson has earned that, to be honest. I mean, come on. The issue is not just the football acumen. It was the personal experience of Hugh Jackson in Cleveland. Just 100 miles north.
You don't have to sell it, Mark. Everyone knows there should be no reason Hugh Jackson gets another head coaching job. It was a joke. You're free, Mark.
Huh?
You're safe. Everything's okay.
I am still damaged.
The Miami Dolphins also made a move on Monday. They fire Adam Gase here on Bright Horizons Monday after three seasons.
New Horizons.
I don't know if the coaches would agree with this title, but
Horizons is the name of
Marvin
my children's
Lewis is
daycare
reportedly
center.
Looking into broadcasting, maybe front office. Who knows? Those are new horizons for him.
Adam Gase out after 3 years. And the Dolphins, for the fourth time this decade, will look for a new head coach. The team also promoted GM Chris Greer to oversee the football operations. A tough day for friends of the Around the NFL podcast. Mike Tannenbaum reassigned. He had been the EVP of football operations. So Tannenbaum, who's been on our show, Adam Gase, who was on our show in March, both swept out in Miami. And Greg, I know you got takes on this. You think this is the worst job out there right now.
Because they've shown no long-term vision. They never replace everyone at once. They always keep one guy. At one point, they kept their GM, then brought in Tannenbaum above him, then fired the GM and brought in another fake GM, kept their coach. But then
GM.
Chris Greer, when he was hired, did not have any decision-making.
That was his title.
Yeah, it was fake GM. He had no decision-making power.
FGM.
And now he does because he's won some political power struggle.
Him and Serena Williams were right. Co-fake GMs.
Right.
They like shared a little office with like two computers facing the opposite way towards
Gloria
the wall.
Stefan was like the fake football operations head.
Venus Williams was in analytics.
Little dot matrix printer.
Fergie was an intern.
It's always these little internal battles that different people are fighting to try to keep their jobs. That's number one. So I don't have any faith the organization will make a good choice or that it's a good setup. And then number two, the roster's bad, that you're going to have all this dead money with Ryan Tannehill. And then what do you have? You have Xavier Howard and Laremy Tunsil and not a good home crowd. There's nothing really to like.
I totally agree with you.
Don't have a pick either.
And I guess you could have viewed it as a bit of a coup d'etat when they got Adam Gase, who years ago, not long ago, was seen as the next great mastermind. They called him the next Don Shula to come to Miami. And now it's names like Eric Bieniemy and Mike Munchak and Vic Fangio that they're going to interview.
Fangio.
It's like, wait a minute. You just had this next big thing, and you couldn't make it work. And this is – so all the people we're talking about today – they get hired with all these bells and whistles and parades and draperies. They're all going to be gone two or 3 years
later. Gase is getting a lot of love still. I mean, he's got relationships with the media and immediately.
Some of them close to us.
Sure, but immediately it's a talk that he's going to interview, and the Browns is the most common job. So.
Mark is scared.
Wake me up.
Hugh Jackson or Adam Gase? Adam Gase. It's a good upgrade ultimately.
Hugh Jackson?
Yeah.
Yes. That's not an extremely tough question.
Adam Gase is...
Although at the time, you were pretty excited about Hugh Jackson.
Of course I was. Case in point. Who's the next guy we're all excited about? Talk to me 700 days from now.
Mark, you're very intense right now.
Well, because you know what? A big part of this is when you're in this thing and we're watching NFL Network from 6 a.m. until everything is the sky is falling left and right all over the place. All of this is the biggest news ever, but the rate of these coaching hires suggests that the vast majority, when you hire eight, six or seven are going to go totally south. It's kind of depressing.
Well, which takes us to the Arizona Cardinals. They make the decision, and this is something that we kind of knew was coming, but it's also now official. Steve Wilks hired. He gets 1 year. He takes over a team. Remember what we talked about, men? Men, I call you. Usually I call you boys. Sometimes
well,
guys.
we've matured on this day. On
I mean,
2019
We've either sired multiple children or overcome cancer. I think we deserve the title men.
Kids having kids, Greg.
Is this the most masculine podcast, Erica?
By far.
Oh, yeah.
All right. Anyway, echo chamber. So, no, what was I talking about? I'm so caught up with
Steve Wilks. Man's career.
When Steve Wilks got hired, I remember we were all at the scouting combine in February. And we all kind of had a conversation. I think we talked about it on this very pod that Steve Wilks was the guy where you kind of felt a little sorry for him because a lot of these other teams, even John Gruden, who got a lot of attention at the combine, there was excitement around the team and the idea of a new horizon and a lot to build on potentially. And Wilks had never had that. And they do, and they went and they got Josh Rosen, which I thought was the right move at the time, but nothing really came of that. At least in his first year. And I just feel like Wilks kind of got a raw deal here. I don't know if he was the guy or not the guy, but he got written off by about eight games into the season, and these guys deserve more time to mature into the job. I don't think that's how you do business.
They've also fired Byron Leftwich, who was the second offensive coordinator they had the season after firing Mike McCoy. And Byron Leftwich was meant to be someone that they could build around and a young coach they could grow. And the Cardinals are a good example of a zero patience situation where why are we giving an NFL coach 1 year to take over a bad organization? It was a hard to watch team. There wasn't a lot happening there. He's like one of the coaches that wants to fit players into his scheme that
Absolutely.
Is immovable, and that is he's got to learn from that if you're Steve Wilks. At the same time,
but he never even got a chance to learn.
I agree.
From it.
I just think something about it seems very unfair.
I think
you shouldn't be learning. That's the job of a coordinator. You should know what you're doing when you're an NFL head coach.
Well, when you get it's your first job. I don't care what
your
job is.
That's what the coordinator position is for,
I don't care if it's president of the United States. There's a learning curve to every job you work in. If you are running
a sub-NFL level offense for 16 games, which he was, when he said all offseason, everything we're going to do is based on the run and the offensive line, and he had one of the worst offensive lines in the NFL – do you want to hear from your coach in 2019? Everything we're going to do is based on the run?
One of the worst five offenses in the Football Outsiders era, according to their numbers. I think part of the factor here was Steve Keim, their GM, is very much on the hot seat but is allowed to keep his job. And you just get the sense they're almost giving Keim one chance to take a mulligan because Wilkes wasn't his first choice by any means, according to reports. And, like, whatever this new tandem is, Keim and the new coach is going to have a short shelf.
Well, and real quick, it's not a good look that Mike McCarthy's name was floated out there as the Cardinals being very interested and wanting to give him a lot of power to come in and have personnel power. And Mike McCarthy, from what we're hearing, has no interest in going there. Not a good start.
So here's the other way to look at it, because I do think giving a coach 1 year is not good business. But Vance Joseph in Denver, the Broncos had not had back-to-back losing seasons since the 1970s, early in the 1970s, which is a remarkable achievement in any era, but especially in the salary cap era. Well, Joseph comes and they just can't get it together. And you remember there was a lot of whispers that Joseph was maybe a one-and-done candidate last year. They gave Joseph another season to get it going. They gave him a better quarterback in Case Keenum. But, Greg, ultimately, they just could not get anything going. And the way they ended the season maybe just solidified that it was time for him to move on.
There's not much to like about this situation, again, because you don't have a quarterback. I mean, you have Von Miller, so I would take it over the Dolphins job. You have Chris Harris. You have a couple players. You have a guy in John Elway who I don't think really is struggling for job security. You wonder if Gary Kubiak would listen to becoming a head coach again. It sounds like he wants – John Elway would love Gary Kubiak to be the coordinator, and they bring in someone with Kubiak.
Well, there are reports out there that John Elway would really love to somehow trade for John Harbaugh.
That's
the next Broncos.
Yeah, Mike Garofalo, Ian Rapoport have kind of thrown that out there as the Dolphins.
Can you trade for a
and
coach
the Broncos as two teams that would love to go after John Harbaugh? But why would I don't think the Ravens are going to do
I
that.
I also found it interesting that Elway came out and said that Adam Gase, who was their offensive coordinator and someone that Elway thought that was not ready to be a head coach some years back, is saying no, he's not a candidate at all. I mean, I don't.
Mark love that.
No, well, I just Gase think that's fire. A, it's a it's just
he's not the only one.
Okay.
What was that, Eric?
What?
I don't know. It
wasn't appropriate.
It was way inappropriate. Totally, especially on New Horizons.
Or
Monday.
Spot on.
Yeah, so it's a tough job. It's a defense that is underperformed, and Joseph was a defensive guy. So and that's a whole thing, too, with all this, Wes. There's eight head coach openings, and everyone wants to go in the new direction in the NFL, which is get an offensive-minded guy. And I would think Elway is the same way. But there's a lot of openings and maybe not a lot of guys even capable for the gig. It's a good time to be an offense coordinator with some pedigree.
It is. I mean, I totally agree that you don't know where they'll turn. There are tons of candidates who are offensive minds. Nobody knows if they're going to be good head coaches. And I have no problem with Vance Joseph being out after some of the coaching strategy he's used throughout games. But I think that John Elway is getting off easy. And I'm not sure exactly what Joe Ellis does or is responsible for.
He's team president.
Seems to be running the whole
Fake
operation.
President?
I mean, there's essentially an ownership vacuum because of what's happening with the Bolin family and fight over inheritance. But Joe Ellis is running the business. He's essentially running like an owner would.
His and John Elway's fingerprints are all over these disappointing seasons.
Think of how many different coaches and quarterbacks Elway has had in his time. And there's a great stat. It's a little unfair, but a great stat that Elway was 20-28 in the 3 years, you know, before Manning arrived, and 20-28 in the three years since.
Yeah, and outside of Jerry Jones, John Elway is the closest there is to a GM who simply would have to fire himself to be removed because he's, you know, an icon.
Well, I don't know, but what if he has another Vance Joseph and another Brock Osweiler?
I'm saying who's going to fire him? Who fires John Elway in Denver?
That's Joe Ellis.
Does he?
I mean,
it helped that he had a very good draft and brought in some good talent. However, yes, the quarterback position, which is ironic, obviously, because of what he did for a living before he went into car sales and then into the front office.
But well-worn path.
Yeah, well-worn path. But you get the feeling that he has no idea what to do at quarterback because, again, we don't have a strong quarterback class. You have Case Keenum, I think, under contract for one more year.
$7 million guaranteed next year, so
right.
It's almost
And then you have a bunch of guys who's on the market. It's guys that are kind of in the Case Keenum tier of quarterback, so they're kind of caught in between. Meanwhile, Von Miller, who's one of the great defenders of this era, is going to continue to get older and get paid a ton of money. It's a tough situation. In Denver, not high up on the list of best jobs, is it, Greg?
would say number six.
Number six of eight.
Wow.
Wait, let me just go through this.
Sexy.
Bengals.
I have them eighth.
I would have them probably seventh. This is a weird way to do
Mark,
this.
Mark, where do you have the Dolphins?
I had the Dolphins above the Bengals. I would say Dolphins seven, Bengals eight.
Arizona.
Exactly how I have it. I have the Cardinals fifth.
Yeah, they're in the middle somewhere because they got a pick. I like Rosen. They have the number one pick. They have some recent track record.
This is taking some mental energy to go backwards on our – I don't even have a list, so.
Well, that's good. All right, let's move on to the Jets. Todd Bowles officially out. He was let go on Sunday night. This was the worst-kept secret in the NFL. We knew Bowles was gone once the Jets' season spiraled. He loses 40 games in 4 years. That's not a good average. No playoff appearances. There was a report that Jim Harbaugh – that the Jets would shake the tree and see if maybe they could get Jim out of Michigan. But there is now the idea that Jim is not going anywhere. And beyond that, in a press conference today, Chris Johnson, who is the acting owner while Woody is overseas as the UK ambassador, he is going to keep general manager Mike Maccagnan aboard. They are going to – the new head coach, whoever it is, and Maccagnan will both answer to – ownership. So a Jim Harbaugh type or anybody that is, a CEO type, one of those big names, is not going to want that arrangement. So it does give you pause. As a Jets fan, you always get nervous because
you want the GM to hire him, don't you?
You do, and you want it to answer the GM. But the Jets, part of these teams that struggle year after year after year, they, like we're talking about, don't always have the right setup, and they're sticking with Big Mac, but they're going to have a structure that makes me nervous that they're going to end up with a rough setup, just like it was when they paired Rex Ryan with John Idzik, which was a disaster. And then they had our boy Charlie Casserly, lead the search that led to Todd Bowles and Maccagnan being paired. They didn't even know each other beforehand. I just want there to be some type of level of competence with this search, and it's hard for me to get excited because I'm worried that this team time and time again does not do that.
Greg mentioned the Dolphins, the paradigm that's so confusing for anyone outside to understand what's attractive about it. These things where you have coach and GM both reporting to the owner almost invariably lead to, you know, infighting and one trying to win favor and often a power struggle. And I would say outside of Mike Maccagnan making a savvy trade that led to Sam Darnold, all credit due, this
Best
roster
on.
Is in rough shape.
What yeah, but you has have Mike Sam Maccagnan? Darnold.
No, that's
Sam
fine. Darnold. That was your move.
Right.
But what is it about Mike Maccagnan?
That's what saved his job.
That to me is like that's not enough. He did a great job getting that trade done, but it is about roster building.
It's the one position that can save your job if you make a trade, and that turned out to be an incredibly savvy trade with the Colts.
No doubt.
And he got lucky, too. There's luck that's involved as a component, but that's how sports is.
But this is still the man you're leaning on to build the rest of the roster around your young quarterback. That's where the trust is.
I'm not going to say Maccagnan is the right guy.
I don't
know if he is.
I don't follow the Jets as well as Dan does, but Christopher Johnson, everything I've read and seen from him, I trust him. Like, he seems to have a good head on his shoulders. He seems to know what he's doing. I would have way more confidence in him picking a coach than
but
the GM picking a coach.
He's not the owner. He's the acting owner.
But for all intents and purposes,
the current owner is going to – who knows? He's the ambassador to
the UK.
UK.
Yeah.
Not a lot of people in that administration have kept jobs for too long, and we're about halfway through
already. It sounds like Chris Johnson, it's his gig.
They have confirmed, or there's been multiple poll reports that they've requested to talk with Todd Monken, who's kind of fun, Eric Bieniemy from the Chiefs, and Chris Richard from the Cowboys, and they were turned down by Matt Campbell, who's the Iowa State coach.
Who's probably turning down any pro offer. It's not just the Jets.
Stay.
I mean, the Eric Bieniemy should be not new news. That was mentioned on our Twitter show just a couple weeks ago.
Insider Mark says.
Oh, you mentioned it.
Yeah.
Nice.
Little fill in the blank game.
Remember that? A lot of the things just
Roughly 20 days ago.
Let's move on to the Bucs. Dirk Koetter out after three lost seasons in Tampa. There's just no progress, no growth, and maybe Chris Wessling, a lot of that can be attributed to getting into bed with Jameis Winston as the face of your franchise, who was suspended to start the season, who was benched, but it sounds like the Bucs as an organization are still behind their former first overall pick. So whoever takes this job is going to have to figure out how to make that work.
I don't
think they're really that much behind Jameis Winston. I think they're saying we're going to foot the $20 million bill for next year to give him a one-year audition on top of the 4 years we've already seen. But he's not a part of the coaching search like you would expect from a number one overall draft pick and franchise
quarterback. I'm with you. That I don't even know if he's guaranteed to make the team. It almost just makes sense to keep him on a one-year contract. They have the number five pick in the draft, and you would think they'll be looking at the quarterbacks. I know it's not a great class, but they have to be looking at a quarterback.
And that pick comes one pick before the New York Giants. So, you know, that could become a very important moment in the draft.
Not a terrible roster. I know this is one of the worst franchises in the league. I think they have one winning season in a long stretch. But not the worst roster out there. They got some players.
It's a tricky roster.
James Light, the GM who is sticking around, said today of Winston, he has done some amazing things. There's a lot to like about Jameis, and he'll be here next year. So, yeah. It doesn't say anything beyond next year. But for me, if you're the head if you take the head coach job, You probably take it with the understanding that that's your guy.
You got to have a plan. It is interesting how many of these GMs on the hot seat all kept their jobs. David Caldwell in Jacksonville, Steve Keim in Arizona, Jason Light in Tampa, and Mike Maccagnan in New York are four off the top.
I think the firing season for GMs is different than coaches.
I mean, they're knee deep in draft and scouting.
They get fired throughout the offseason in March, June, May. I mean, you don't see coaches getting fired.
You're going to think this is a joke question. It honestly is not. I have a serious question. If you are a coach with two or three offers and you are someone that, like, I have a physical, nauseating response to the Bucs uniform, would you go to a completely different organization where you love the look and feel of the stadium, the way it looks on television, the uniforms from top to bottom, or am I being utterly insane?
I think that you have to trust your instincts, and if you don't like an area, if you're not going to find
pleasure, it would keep me in bed.
Got some breaking news here. I mean, it happened to be we're talking about him. Dirk Koetter is considered the front runner for the Falcons' offensive coordinator.
Got me nervous. Didn't he already have that job once?
Yeah.
I got really nervous there. I thought it's
Jets.
This whole thing is going to be a stressful process. So Dirk Koetter's going back to Atlanta.
Possibly. I mean, he's the heavy front runner, according to D. Orlando Ledbetter.
We've seen Daryl Bevel's name with the Falcons and Gary Kubiak.
Let's talk about another big hiring on Monday, or not a firing here on New Horizons Monday, but a hiring on New Horizons Monday. It is a new horizon for Mike Mayock, the draft guru who has anchored the NFL Network coverage of the draft and the process leading up to the draft for years, and has really built a name as one of the more knowledgeable college talent scouts there is, at least on the old boob tube. Well, the Raiders, they say, hey, bro, you want to go work in a front office? You want the highest post that we have? You're the general manager now. You are replacing Reggie McKenzie. So, and Mike Mayock says, okay, bro, I will take that job. That's not a bad gig. I like going on TV, me and Rich. Me and Eisen, we get along well. That's fine. That's all good. But you're going to give me a GM spot, get a nice office, get a parking spot. I'm the GM of an NFL team now, Mike Mayock.
The parking spot turned the tides here.
It didn't hurt.
One thing is with the Niners, when they went and hired John Lynch and people thought, how can this work? It's someone with no developmental skills. Like, that's a former player who's in the media. I think it's an outside-the-box
move. Like, he had, like, temper tantrums and stuff? Like,
who?
And, like, ate crayons and stuff?
John Lynch?
Yeah.
He hasn't done enough.
No, just
like,
that he was not – he didn't come from that background.
That's more like a term from a preschool report.
He hasn't done enough parallel
what
playing.
What term did I even use?
Kids.
I didn't recall.
Developmental skills.
Oh, well, no. I mean, just that, you know, the background was not synced up with – the league thinks the same way about all these people. It's like Mayock to me is an interesting hire. And, I mean, who deserves more of a shot from the media than Mike Mayock? Well, it's an interesting pairing with John Gruden.
Well, they're friends. Who's been scouting – you know, college players more. Obviously, people inside the NFL are doing it as well, but they're looking for a specific skill set, and Mayock's been looking for every team. He is known to be very close with Paul Gunther, who's their defensive coordinator, and he mentioned that Mayock did in his press conference, saying, I know exactly what Paul is looking for, and I know how to find those, you know, types of players. I think it's cool. He's a 60-year-old guy who probably thought, like, this is my chance. Like, you're only going to live one life. And it's an interesting setup and everything, but it's like, do you want to, if you're in his position and as an analyst, do you want to do that your whole life, or do you want to try to be in the game here? You know what I mean? Yep. Do you want to go for it?
Like, do you want to like work
it's for, risky, but why not?
It's you want to like work going, for NFL media?
Heed the call.
And year after year, do the same thing and just live a cycle year after year after year. And nothing ever changes, and it's different season, but it's the same thing over and over and over again. Or do you want to go join as a GM somewhere?
I like that, but there's a flip side to that.
Dan, that was a dark look into your psyche.
I don't know what this. I don't know what's happening here.
I was making a reference to our lives, Mark. That's what Mark was just waiting for me to shut up, so he wasn't listening.
No, I do not want to suddenly necessarily though be attached to the success of the Oakland Raiders a year from now, where every draft season, if you're Mike Mayock, you are put out there as this mastermind that has these massive media calls with everyone clutching to you and your information, and you're put out there as a hero. And
he knows the deal, though.
I know he does. I'm just saying that there's a flip side to this, and ask John Gruden is the first person to ask. Like, a year ago, you're John Gruden, television guy that everyone wants, and now you're John Gruden.
It's a challenge.
It's a challenge, and, but I think he's up for it.
And like Parcells, it's like, he always talked about you want to go to the 1-15 team. I mean, you're not going to get worse.
And it turns Daniel Jeremiah into the most powerful figure at our network and someone who is a generally nice guy who's probably going to turn into an absolute nightmare
monster
now that he's been given
this
type of power.
I think the real under-the-radar breaking news from that whole segment was Dan's trying to bring boob tube back. I think I haven't heard that since my dad when I was like 9 years old. Hey, what's on the old boob tube?
What's on the old boob tube? Hey, get the clicker. All right. How about your Cleveland Browns, Mark? Obviously, Greg Williams is formally interviewing for the head coaching job. He was the interim and did quite well taking over for Hugh Jackson. So he interviews on Tuesday. Freddie Kitchens, does he get an interview himself?
What's
the process?
One thing that encourages me amidst some gossip and rumors that have me highly concerned, as you know, is that they have announced more than double any other team of the people that they're interviewing. It sounds like they're going to take their time. Dan Campbell, Matt Eberflus, Brian Flores, Mike Munchak, Mike McCarthy, Adam Gase, Kevin Stefanski.
All the Mikes.
Colts OC Nick Sirianni and Jim Caldwell. Hey. I mean, it's just like at least my concern was they're going to interview two people and someone's just going to hire Mike McCarthy and not think about it. I hope that they are open-minded enough, ownership, front office, all of them, to be wowed by someone different than we expect.
I want John Dorsey to make the decision.
I absolutely think that is how it must go. And I'm not convinced that's how it's going to go at all.
It's the only thing around the Browns. It's a great, desirable job with the best up-and-coming quarterback in the league and a ton of talent on the roster, and they already proven in a 7-8-1 season they can hang with anyone. A lot of people pick them as a playoff team, but will they get out of the way upstairs in ownership? Because they have meddled time and time again in the last 7 or 8 years, however long Haslam's been there. Will they stay out of the way? Dorsey deserves a wide berth because he had a nice first year with this team. Will he get it?
I think the one concern lingering with it, who knows that Adam Gase couldn't go to another team and do a good job, but it is Jimmy Haslam and Peyton Manning are legit very, very close friends to the point that for years, there were rumors that Peyton Manning was going to become high up in Cleveland's front office, that they're super tight because of their Tennessee ties. And Peyton Manning is in ownership's ear saying Adam Gase is the guy. So he's going to have, from top down, you're going to have to be wowed by someone else for a change of direction, if that's how this is actually playing out behind the scenes.
Lastly, the Packers. What are you hearing, Greg?
Well, my sources on the ground tell me.
That's nice.
I don't know. Josh McDaniels is one of the names.
When I say what are you hearing, I'm talking about what you're watching on the boob tube yourself.
Yeah. Josh McDaniels was requested for an interview. Zach Taylor, who's kind of like the next – I guess people are wondering if he's the next McVay because he's worked under McVay. He's in his 20s, I believe, still was requested for an interview. It sounds like they're going to go through a pretty long list. Pat Fitzgerald, the Northwestern coach who once was very close and worked under Mark Murphy, who is essentially their acting owner.
That would not surprise me.
Seems like the favorite just because of that relationship.
Wes, I know that you every Saturday sit down and watch Northwestern on that special cable package you have. What are your thoughts on the coach?
Well, I do have a friend from Tybee Island who's a chiropractor and is close friends with Pat Fitzgerald.
Wow.
Yes.
Not bad.
So they're from the same area. They've known each other since childhood, and he speaks in glowing terms.
Let's get him on the show.
Pat Fitzgerald. Mm. Doug Bisbee's his name.
No, Dr. I mean, let's Dr. get Pat Doug. Fitzgerald. I don't care about Doug. Sorry, buddy.
Sorry, Dr. Doug.
All right, and we think the Packer job is the – oh, let's go through the rest of it. All right, the Jet job, where do you put that?
I think that's, like, in the top three because of Sam Darnold. And it's a good challenge, and you can be the first coach in a long time to make the Jets a success.
I'd go three, exactly because of that, behind the Packers and Browns.
All right, how about the Bucks?
I have the Bucks sixth.
They're in the middle. I don't think their roster is that bad, and I'd rather have Winston than a couple of these other team situations. Winston and the number five pick.
I have five teams between six and seven, so that's where I put
the Jameis Winston versus Marcus Mariota battle between Wes.
No one's
so depressing.
No one's
going
won.
Out with a whimper.
Yeah, so depressing.
I'd rather have a vacancy than Jameis Winston.
Packers. I think that's number two, I'd put it.
That's where I have them.
Maybe one.
The only thing I'd say if you
– I would take number one because of the Browns' history.
Baker Mayfield is 20 years old.
I know, but it's a short-term league. We keep talking about, you know, in 2016 they hired seven coaches. Only one of them still has a job. So I'm worried about the next 3 years.
Favors the bold.
Aaron Rodgers, I think going and winning some Super Bowls with Aaron Rodgers is plenty bold for me.
I think it's a challenging job, too, because it reminds me it's not that it's the Raiders, but it's a little Gruden-esque where, like, when you hit Green Bay with Aaron Rodgers as your quarterback, 8-8 is going to get you flamed. You better be 11-5 or 12-4, or people are going to come calling.
He's also the quarterback that in this room has been stated many times, the best ever. How many coaches get the opportunity?
Well, ask Jimmy Johnson about working with Dan Marino. That could not have gone worse. Like, these things don't always go well.
But there's also something to be said for unlocking a mystery like Baker Mayfield. What are the possibilities there?
Absolutely. It's a great debate. Also great was our conversation with Mike Garofalo of NFL Network outside of the Eagles facility. We did it on our Twitter show earlier today, and now we will present it to you in full. Take it away, us. That's a great segue. Mark Sessler says a lot of hot air coming from NFL Network airwaves. Now joining us from the Eagles complex.
That did not go well.
in Philadelphia is the great Mike Garofalo. Mike, your thoughts on Mr. Sessler's comments. Let's start there.
They were checking me in, and I was catching up with one of my buddies, Matt Schneider, from my Fox days. So, frankly, I didn't catch any of it. If
you don't want to know
me right now, I'd be happy.
Okay, you don't want to know. Wonderful. You guys can take it offline. But, Mike, thank you for joining us here on the ATN Twitter show. You're outside, by the way. And, you know, at this point, Mike, I mean, it's almost 2019. A little green screen. We could get away with the technology, and you'd be feeling good in a corridor somewhere.
I'd have no problem doing this show from the comforts of my home, which I was doing until late last night when they said, we need your update on Nick Foles and his ribs tomorrow morning. And I thought, okay, when I got to get there, I can do it from home. We've got the phone. No, we wanted to, which was great, though, because I got an eyewitness account of Nick Foles walking into the building here today. And when he was asked how he was doing, he literally tapped his ribs and he said, I'm good. That's what my eyewitness source told me.
You're a real journo.
That kind of color from home.
Sarah's exactly not right. Getting that's from his basement. Give me a break.
No, he's not from Don Draper's office. You ever notice how his home set is like Draper and it's like later Draper? You
it
know?
Is. It's late period Draper.
When I think of Tom, when I think of Draper, yeah. I think of Tom Pelissero. There's a high parallel there between those two.
Late period Draper.
Yeah, I said, is that John Hamm? One day I put a post up on my Instagram story. My wife was like, it better not be because she has never met John Hamm, and I know that's something kind of lofty to throw out in the universe,
sure.
But the thing is, he was at the NFL Honors twice, and I didn't take her either year. The one, because I just never thought, like, oh, she wants to go see John Hamm, he's hosting. The second time, I didn't know he was presenting, so she wanted to kill me both times. Anyway, we're way off track. What were
it's
we talking
for the
about?
Best.
Nick Foles, bruised ribs.
Yeah, there's no need. Exactly, there's really no need for you to introduce your wife ever to a John Hamm type. I mean, whether it's actually him or
not
a man that looks like that. All right, Mike.
She's told me, I love you. Hold on, no. This is an important point. She's told me, I love you, but if he ever walks into a place where I am and says, you're with me, she's gone.
I get it. Makes sense. So Foles walks into the, or does he levitate into the facility? Because at this point, that man is gold.
Somebody sent me a tweet today. It was a picture of Nick Foles and a picture of Jesus Christ, and he said, I can't tell the difference between these two pictures. So if you're into that, I guess. You know, they are building shrines to him here, and Chris Long said maybe it was the shrine that allowed him to get up from that hit against Jadeveon Clowney a couple of weeks ago. Well, maybe it was the shrine that made sure that his ribs didn't crack. Now, they're bruised, and that is a painful thing. You know, I kept saying on air today, it's just bruised ribs. I've never had bruised ribs. I know it does hurt. I mean, cracked ribs and fractured ribs, that's the stuff that's going to prevent you from playing. And that's right. Not the case with Nick Foles. He got that full battery of tests. Everything looks good. And as I explained a little bit earlier, it was a $500,000 round of tests there, because that $250,000 per game starting thing that he got during the year, it doubles in the postseason. He gets $500,000 if he plays 33% of the snaps on Sunday, and then another $500,000 if he, so $1 million for every playoff game that he wins, up to $4 million if he should win all four of them.
He is Jesus. Mike, you cut your teeth in the New York, New Jersey metro area.
Yeah.
And you know I'm a Jets fan. So what do you got for me, Mike? Where are we at? Are they going to get this right? And what names are you hearing out there? Help me, Mike.
Let me just undercut my own credibility here and say I was the guy that said Steve Wilks in Arizona was going to be a fantastic hire. Now, I called the foul on myself today on Twitter, and I could argue that, you know, he didn't get a fair shake there, but I screwed that one up. So are they going to get it right? I don't know if they're going to get it right, but I will tell you this. It's going to be an interesting search, because I believe, and we've already seen Eric Bieniemy out there, I think you're going to get them looking at a couple other guys who maybe don't have the same pedigree as some of these retread head coaches. I know that they would love to get a crack at Mike McCarthy. That has been my understanding, and I mentioned that a couple of weeks ago. However, I don't know that McCarthy has them at the top of his list. And the last I heard, the possibility of McCarthy sitting out a year was a strong one for him. Now, he's kind of keeping things under wraps, close to the vest. You're not going to hear a whole lot about that. I do expect that he will interview, but the teams are going to have to court him, and he's going to have to court teams. I mean, he's going to have to go a little bit of both ways here on McCarthy. Yeah, I do.
When did Mike McCarthy become the belle of the ball? Who, you know, you would think Sam Darnold, that what better coaching job could you get than being able to work with a guy like Sam Darnold? I'm surprised. Do you think other teams are looking at McCarthy that way, like the Jets are too?
He's going to have to fully investigate this Jets situation, because I know a lot of times some coaches will look at it and they'll say, New York, do I really want New York? You know what? It's not even really New York. It's so far west in Jersey, you don't even feel the hot breath of Manhattan on your neck. Trust me. I mean, it's the market. I get it. But it's a little bit different lifestyle living out there. And the other thing is, the bar is so low. You go in and make the playoffs, you're going to be carried off as a hero at this point. This franchise, we keep getting these like restarts where you think, okay, now it's the time. You know, you come in there, you have a little bit of success, and Darnold has shown some flashes, and you know, he's got a lot to work on still, but he's shown some flashes early on. You think it's a guy that you would like to work with. Yeah.
All right. And then on the Browns side, we were talking at the top of the show that feels like it's the best job to have out there. Bruce Arians went as far to throw his own name into the mix a few weeks back. I haven't really heard much on that end. I don't know if you've heard anything about Bruce, but what are your thoughts on what's going on with the Browns right now?
Now, and then Bruce Arians expanded to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers today by texting Ian Rappaport saying, you know, yeah, now I'd consider that one as well. You know what? While you're at it, hey, Bruce, how about the Cardinals? Yeah, sure, I'd go back there as well. You know, it's a moving target sometimes for these guys. I get it. It's an attractive job, and I buy into, and I tweeted this out earlier, Peyton Manning is a Adam Gase supporter, and Peyton Manning is close with Jimmy and Dee Haslam, so I fully expect the possibility of Gase landing in Cleveland to be a strong possibility here. Now, you know, we mentioned McCarthy. Steve Weiss said a couple of weeks ago he doesn't think he's going to wind up being the head coach, but I still wouldn't be shocked if they talked to McCarthy and brought him on a formal interview. But Gase is the guy that I'm looking at here, because, you know, he and Ryan Tannehill, it never really quite clicked, but through the whole period. I covered this team closely a couple of years ago. I had their playoff game against the Steelers as well. Nobody stands by their quarterback more than Adam Gase. It's just no matter what the guy is doing, Gase is always supporting him, never negative regardless of who it is, and always feeling like he can get that guy moving in the right direction. So I think his confidence paired with Baker Mayfield's dangerous cockiness, I think it's a good combination.
I mean, Mike, I'd have one question, though, because it was interesting to hear John Dorsey say during his press conference that he hoped ownership would listen to essentially their search committee's recommendation, and it certainly sounds like a Peyton Manning to Haslam channel for Adam Gase. I don't get the sense necessarily that John Dorsey feels that way, and there's also a star wide receiver on the Browns who doesn't get along and has a bad history with Adam Gase, and Adam Gase in general, I think there's a lot to like, but there's an aura of sort of cantankerousness with Adam Gase, and why after the Dolphins experience do the Browns say this is the best we can do?
Mark is nervous.
Just a bit.
I don't think they sit there and say, boy, it's got to be Adam Gase. If not, we're in some serious trouble right here. I just believe in his candidacy for this job.
Yeah.
And, you know, listen, once you sit down with guys, you know, they have an idea who their favorites are and who they certainly have a list in the order of things. But I tend to allow these processes to play out. I mean, these interviews really are important. And I've heard a lot of situations where, you know, hey, this guy moved himself up on our list during our interview. He really hit it off, especially with the owner. I mean, the owners are the kinds of guys that they go into it. They don't understand the X's and O's per se the way that maybe the general manager does. So they're relying a lot upon the interview. And if he can go in there and he can wow Jimmy Haslam, great. And if those guys in there, as far as John Dorsey, Elliot Wolf, Alonzo Highsmith, all those guys who certainly know their football there, if they can come to an agreement there, I could see Gase coming out. That's all I'm saying. He's a guy who's going to get a lot of support from Peyton Manning and other folks around the league as well. Though I guess it depends on who you talk to, because John Elway's not bringing him in. And John Elway was the guy that said he didn't think he was ready a couple of years ago when he moved on when he was the Broncos offensive coordinator.
We've got 8 openings. We're hearing all these names bandied about. Some are being reported. I'm sure there are names that aren't even being reported about that you probably hear. Is there a name that may not be reportable but has shocked you or surprised you that this person is getting interest?
Yeah, he's not reportable.
Is there anybody from college?
I got a good one.
Ooh.
Come on, Mike. No one's watching.
Break it right here. He's from college.
It's a possibility, yeah. But I want to talk about another guy that surprised me today. How about that? Josh McDaniels, because he is getting some interest. You know, Bob Lamont, who is a coaching agent to the Stars, I guess you could say, talked last year after he terminated his relationship with Josh McDaniels when he left the Colts at the altar, and he said,
please,
you're committing professional suicide here. And he said, I never go back on my word. My word is my bond. All that stuff that Lamont said publicly. And he felt like McDaniels was never going to get a shot again. It was going to have to be him succeeding Bill Belichick. Well, McDaniels is getting some looks, and I guess I'm a little surprised because, you know, if you're another team, and look, we're in a league now where a player could do something on the field, in the locker room, even off the field, and a team will cut him, and another team will say, hey, no problem, he didn't do that in our presence, so let's bring him in here, let's give him a shot here. So it's a similar type of thing with Josh McDaniels where, you know, the Colts would never even think about the possibility of bringing in Josh McDaniels, but because the Packers didn't have that done to them, they'll say, oh, well, let's bring him in. If he wants to coach here, great. We don't care what he did to the Colts. So, well, I guess I'm a little bit surprised by that, the fact that he is getting some interest this year.
Two things, Mike. First of all, if you want to get back to Hoboken, there's a car there with the engine running. Turn around, get in the thing, and hightail it. Get on the turnpike and fly.
Well, I think it's a player's car. There's a player
coming
out here, and it's so dark here that I can't see.
Take it.
It might be. It's a bearded fellow.
It is. But I think you could take him.
Hold on, watch. Hey, Jason.
Oh, he's stealing a painting.
No, see,
that's not Jason.
Not Kelsey.
Why is that man stealing a painting? That's good, right?
Quick tweet before we say goodbye to Mike.
There goes half the full shrine. Yes.
All right, here it is. Mike Harefull is my hero. I'm watching the show in my Nick Foles jersey, and my God, I've never heard happier news. I don't know the hashtag means BDN, but I can tell you, Mike, that people are excited in Philly about that quarterback.
You know, I know exactly what that hashtag means. Let me just say, your friend Colleen Wolf, she's not as innocent as you think, okay? And during the show on Saturday and Sunday, boy, was she trying to get me on that one, hashtag BDN. She was dancing around that. Ask her about that. Yeah.
That's funny because on this show, she said that we should ban the term Big D when discussing the Cowboys, but that's for another show and another time. Mike.
What a two-face.
Mike Garofalo, thank you, buddy. Get dry, and we appreciate you joining us here on the Twitter show.
You got it, guys. Thank you. Happy New Year.
All right, that was great. Before we go, a hashtag that's been on Twitter, hashtag when Marvin Lewis was hired, January 14th, 2003, if you'd believe that. So when Marvin Lewis
was hired. By the way, I started that hashtag.
Oh, you started it?
Yes.
Nice job by you, Chris Wessler.
Really?
Wow.
Yes. Since is that taking off?
I have no idea if it's taking off.
Well, let's make it a thing. You started since you started
you
it,
You started
Wes.
The Dalton scale? You started this?
I don't
wow.
know
and you tell us you're
thing.
Not a Bengals fan.
When Marvin Lewis was hired, where were you, Wes?
I was living in Cincinnati. I was in my seventh year as the records manager at Keating, Newling, and Kleekamp law firm, playing softball four nights a week, playing hoops in the backyard with Spice Rack.
Spicy!
Dreaming of Tybee Island, drinking entirely too much beer, getting in trouble. Probably had just broken off an engagement with a girl who engaged herself to me. That's what I was doing in 2003.
How about you, Mark?
What was the date? January 14th or something like that?
January 14th, 2003.
That is 9 days after the Browns lost a horrific playoff game to the Steelers.
Tommy Maddox and the Steelers.
Absolutely. Kelly Holcomb and the Browns, big lead. Bruce Arians is the offensive coordinator. The backdrop to this, I was living in Denver. I watched that game alone because I was so nervous about it, despite having a bunch of Browns fans who were friends, and was living with a young female who, quite an up-and-down relationship, to put it no other way, and we left town about a week or two later in a yellow VW camper van attempting to go to Los Angeles. The van, after stopping at multiple national parks, broke down in Arizona, in Phoenix, where suddenly she told me after about being there for about a week or two, where we were living in a van in a parking lot.
Essentially, you were homeless.
We were very close because this is a nice person, but this is one of those special girlfriends in your 20s that costs about $12,000 and put me into massive debt. And so I was on the outs big time. And
those
she,
are called hookers.
She started, well, it, you know, it was not exactly how that went, but she was telling me suddenly, you know, I'm a desert person. I just think we should stay here. And I'm like, I am not a desert person. And, you know, there was a year or two of tumult that materialized from that. And then I moved to Los Angeles.
A lot of drama.
Did you stay in the van? You just had 2 years. Did you stay in
Phoenix? No. I got an apartment along a highway above what was one of the larger meth labs in Phoenix.
It is the dark of all those stories that I've heard, Mark, and I've heard them all from you. That is the darkest story. Your Arizona story. Nothing tops the Arizona story.
It was a rough period, but I emerged suddenly in Los Angeles 2 years later.
January 14th, 2003, I had just been hired by the Journal News, and I met it on my first day. Another new hire who drove to work in a green Mustang was Ian Rappaport. So we were two 23-year-old journos. I was in a long-distance relationship with my college girlfriend, driving back and forth between New York and Boston, a highly doomed relationship. Mm. Sometimes you just got to know to break up when senior year is over. But instead, I went the route that led to, like, multiple years of heartache. So this was a growing period in the life of the old Zeuser, then the young Zeuser. This was all build up to see if Greg existed in 2003.
I know. It sounds like it was a dark time for all of us. That was one of the least happy times of my life. I don't know exactly what I was doing. I was working at Fox Sports on the weekends, which was great. I was working
out here
in Los Angeles. I was living in West Hollywood. I was working on either Most Outrageous Game Show Moments 5 or 6 or Significant Others, an underrated pilot that eventually did go to series at Bravo. But the personal life, something just didn't feel right. This was not the path mm-hmm. that I should be on at that time, and I bailed.
Well, you were 24, like, right? Or 23.
24.
I would not call it a dark time, but I think all of us probably had that angst that we should have been doing something else with our lives at that age.
Oh yeah, I definitely
felt that.
I probably shouldn't have been covering the swimming and diving championships in upstate New York at that time in my life, and it's something that haunts at you.
I was like an HR coordinator at a Wells Fargo that I could walk to from my apartment along the highway and had no car. I mean, it was not exactly like a high point.
All right, there you go. Black Monday. Oh, excuse me. New Horizons Monday in the books here from Culver City.
Where was Erica in 2003?
Oh yeah.
At 11 years old?
Knee high to a June bug.
Yeah, I was Batgirl number 3 in my 5th grade play.
Also, you would say an emotional dark time for you, potentially.
Yeah, I really kind of felt like I should be doing something different.
Should have been Batgirl number 2.
I know. What's up with you being 3rd in line there?
It's not 3rd. It was 1st.
I don't know. Number 3.
I mean, number 3 seems to come with a certain connotation.
It was a dark period. She's buried it. It's deep. It's deep. You were in the chorus, as they say.
Yeah, I didn't have any lines.
All right. Thank you, everybody. We'll be back on Wednesday with another show. So check that out. And if you didn't check out our Week 17 recap, check that out. And that's it. This is Dan Hansis signing off for Quiet Storm, the mailman, the old boss, and Ricky Hollywood behind the glass.
Happy New Year, guys.
Happy New Year, everybody. 2019. Bring it.
DeAndre Hopkins wearing a skirt.
Yes.